You're listening to Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
When people talk about geoengineering, for or against, one name keeps coming up. For over 20 years, scientist David Keith has kept open the door for discussion and research on climate modification. At Harvard University, David is a professor in the School of Engineering and Applied Sciences. He's also a professor of public policy at the prestigious Harvard Kennedy School. Dr. Keith wins awards and criticism for talking about technology to stave off the worst of climate change if we need it. David Keith, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you. Great to be here.
I know you push hard to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, and you have a company trying to remove CO2 from the air. But today, I'd just like to pick your brain on technology to artificially cool the planet by blocking out some of the sun's rays. In case anyone doesn't know, David, how would solar radiation management, or SRM, work?
So there are lots of ideas, but to pick perhaps the best known one, one might put sulfuric acid droplets, essentially pollution, in the stratosphere, say 20 kilometers over our heads. And these droplets would be much smaller than raindrops, and they would reflect away sunlight in much the same way as raindrops reflect sunlight. Indeed, a water drop in the stratosphere would do about the same thing, but it would evaporate very fast. The sulfuric acid there is really to prevent the water from evaporating. And I'd say there's what's certain is that it's sort of, in a crude way, possible to do that, and that it would reduce climate changes, for example, by cooling the planet. What is very uncertain are what the risks of doing it would be and how well it would work in actually reducing the climate impacts people care about.
How much cooling could we expect?
Well, that depends how much sulfur you put in the stratosphere. There's lots of ways that one could produce quite large coolings, larger even than the amount of warming we have from accumulated carbon dioxide.
Now, scientists in the Arctic Methane Emergency Group have called for regional SRM in the Arctic right now. They hope to stop the Arctic sea ice loss, to slow glacial melt, maybe prevent large-scale releases of methane. Would you agree that the Arctic would be a place to start?
No. I think that in practice, I don't think there's really actually much scientific basis for those claims. The world's climate is all tightly interconnected, and it's meaningless to think about altering climate in just one place. If that was possible, this would all be politically easier, as each country could, I suppose, figure out its own climate engineering and control its own climate. But that's not the actual planet we live on. So in practice, there might be ways that you could arrange solar geoengineering so as to have a slightly stronger effect in the Arctic, but it would not only affect the Arctic, and it's by no means clear that that would be a sensible way to go about it.
Well, is there a threshold or sign that would make you think it was time to try solar radiation management?
I think that right now what we ought to do is have a much more serious research program. There's been a taboo against serious research on this topic, largely driven by the fear that even talking about this will reduce efforts to cut emissions. And that taboo has meant that there really hasn't been a sustained broad-based research program because scientists in the end follow the research money. And so I think what we need is a broad research program, one that involves people in many countries and many disciplines, that breaks the kind of current small group of us. I'm one of them who've been the kind of dominant researchers in the field. I think that's not healthy and increases the chance of groupthink. And I think we need to begin to experiment with small, controlled outdoor experiments as well to understand some of the risks. And I think only after you've done that and the results, look very promising, would it make any sense to talk about deployment.
So, David Keith, what do we know and what don't we know about the impact of solar radiation management on rainfall?
So we've had a whole variety of climate models, kind of the entire normal set of climate models that are now used for the, say, IPCC forecasts of climate change, and they suggest that moderate amounts of solar geoengineering could reduce the change in precipitation, in rain or snowfall, reduce the changes that are caused by increasing CO2 so that it could work to restrain the climate change in both precipitation and temperature.
So we might have fewer, for example, extreme rainfall events.
Yes. In fact, it looks like it works particularly well for reducing the number of extreme events. And that has to do with the fact that solar geoengineering tends to damp the hydrological cycle a little bit, and that one of the causes of extreme events is to do with the energy in the hydrological cycle.
Might it therefore also cause a drought somewhere?
It's possible. So there's a whole lot of uncertain outcomes. I think that one of the claims is often made is that if you do solar geoengineering, you reduce precipitation and cause drought. I think that is a false claim, and it's based on an assumption that solar geoengineering is used to compensate all of the temperature change from increased carbon dioxide. And if you do that, you would decrease the average global precipitation rates, rain rates. That actually doesn't mean you necessarily cause drought, because it's actually the difference between evaporation and precipitation that causes drought, and you reduce both. But in any case, I don't think anybody is seriously advocating that as a scenario. It simply is a scenario that's been analyzed a lot because it's convenient to analyze. And perhaps because people have an instinct that they don't want to do this, so they choose scenarios to analyze that make the technology look bad.
Can solar management damage the ozone layer?
For sure. So putting sulfates in the stratosphere can damage the ozone layer. They do that actually by, in a sense, catalyzing the effectiveness with which chlorine, which humans put in there from chlorofluorocarbon refrigerants and other uses, it's the chlorine burden of the stratosphere that's caused ozone depletion, and adding sulfuric acid can make it worse. So yes.
And I'm concerned about pollution in general. Some scientists calculate global dimming from aerosols and dust may be cooling the planet up to 1 degree C already. If we cut that pollution back, say as a public health measure, we might get a burst of warming. Would that make geoengineering more likely, say as a replacement for that pollution shield, if you want to call it that?
Yeah, if you're sort of in salesmanship mode, that's one of the strongest arguments for doing some solar geoengineering. So right now, the pollutants in the lower atmosphere, particularly sulfur, are a huge global health hazard, perhaps the largest single global health hazard associated with energy. So sulfuric acid air pollution kills more than 2 million, or more than a million anyway, people a year globally. It's a big number. And obviously, the public health measure, it would be enormously beneficial if we reduce those pollutants. And we're beginning to do it. Even in China, air pollution regulations are now sufficiently strong that China has passed its peak sulfur emission, and its sulfur emissions are headed down in China. So just as you said, that sulfur is also reflecting away sunlight and cooling the planet. So as we remove it, we'll see a sudden increase in warming. And so I think it's quite plausible to say that the right thing to do would be to cut the sulfur emissions to the lower atmosphere and perhaps put a tiny amount. You only need like a 50th or less, or a 100th as much, sulfur into the stratosphere, where it would provide the same amount of cooling with much less health impact.
Will the particles added by SRM cause acid rain? That's a question I get quite a bit.
The practical answer is no. The technical answer is yes, but an absolutely tiny, unmeasurable, or nearly unmeasurable amount. So to give you a sense of the magnitude, we now put about 50 million tons of sulfur into the lower atmosphere, which causes acid rain in some locations. And for solar geoengineering, if you did it with sulfate, and there are other things you could do, but if you did it with sulfate, you'd be talking about maybe 1 or 2 million tons, so a few percent of the current amount, and it would be evenly distributed globally instead of concentrated near industrial production. So the impact, environmental impact with respect to acid rain, I think is pretty close to a non-issue, or very, very low down the list of serious concerns.
And finally, in my list of complaints, what about the idea that SRM does nothing to address ocean acidification?
Two answers. So one answer is that, to a good approximation, that's true. But we don't typically oppose things just because they're only partial solutions. So if you have some kind of cancer and I have a chemotherapy which can cure most of your cancer but not one part of it, or causes some side effect, you might still think that you're much better off with the chemotherapy. So the short answer is that the long-term ocean acidification of accumulated CO2 isn't changed much by solar geoengineering. In fact, it's actually not quite true, because if we let the climate warm from increased CO2 in the atmosphere over the next century, the oceans will release extra CO2 into the atmosphere because of the warming. And if you held the warming back with SRM, you'd actually have reduced the net sort of effective emissions of CO2 by as much as 100 gigatons, which is a lot. I mean, it's equivalent roughly of, you know, U.S. emissions over the century. So there actually is some benefit to ocean acidification of doing solar geoengineering. Of course, the real terror that people have is that doing solar geoengineering will cause people to slacken off on their already extraordinarily slack efforts to cut emissions, and so then the problem will be worse.
This is Radio EcoShock. We're talking about cooling off the Earth using artificial means. It's called geoengineering. My guest is one of the world authorities on the subject, Dr. David Keith from Harvard University. Now, on the off topic of chemtrails, you've taken the time to speak with people who vilify you, David, as the devil of geoengineering. Have you received hate comments, and why do you try to still engage with people who disagree with you?
Well, I think, I guess one answer is that's the right thing to do, and it's often actually quite a positive experience. So the people who believe in this thing called chemtrails seem to have a variety of different beliefs, but they believe that the government is or governments are somehow deliberately introducing chemicals or toxins to commercial aircraft is typically what they believe. And then people have a bunch of theories for why that's true, from kind of mass killing a population to climate control. I think there's essentially no chance that that's actually true. And my reason for saying that is not that I just trust what governments are telling me, but that it's very hard to keep big secrets like that. And if there really was such a program, it would be extraordinarily likely that it would leak out and people would have clear proof. And yeah, I have received twice, I guess we've had death threats serious enough to call the police for, but I've also have talked with people who hold that view quite a lot. And almost all the people I've talked to in person have been really respectful and thoughtful and had a real, you know, been willing to engage in a real substantive dialogue. And I think indeed, the chemtrails community is sort of shifting. So it used to be that I think people more believed in versions that were really about mind control or something. And now quite a bit of the chemtrails world, actually more kind of used to be more from the political right end of the spectrum. Now there may be more people in the chemtrails community who effectively believe that something like solar geoengineering is happening and that it's called chemtrails. And so while I don't believe there is any such thing happening, I think that if their concern is that, you know, the kind of global elites will make decisions about how to manipulate the climate, that's a completely valid concern, even though it's not happening yet.
Should the Paris climate talks in 2015 address geoengineering, or do we need a separate body to do that?
That's an impossible question. I mean, I guess the first question is how relevant are the Paris climate talks to what happens next on climate policy anyway? I think the answer to that is at best unclear. I think you can say the following. Serious discussions of climate policy ought to include discussion of solar geoengineering, because it's one of the major things that humanity could do to manage the problem. Not because we necessarily should do it. There are very good reasons for not doing it, but because it's not credible to kind of casually ignore it. It is one of the things that are the only ways to significantly reduce climate risks over a single lifetime. And so if you care about vulnerable people and ecosystems, I think you have to take the idea seriously. So credible climate talks ought to include it in a central way, but I don't think it will be discussed at Paris, and I don't think we necessarily need a separate forum to discuss solar geoengineering. What I think we need are more effective ways to discuss climate policy in general, including solar geoengineering.
As you know, the U.S. National Academy just agreed to more geoengineering research. What did they say, and what does it mean?
Well, so the Academy did recommend that there be a research program, and even that it include, they said that outdoor experimentation could be useful in reducing some kinds of uncertainties. To be clear, the Academy doesn't directly create research funding, and while the Academy said that, it's still the case that there is no federal research, sort of organized federal research funding for solar geoengineering, and that's, I think, a real concern, because part of the way that you get legitimate kind of governance of science and democracies is by government funding that science and getting to make choices and have oversight into what's funded. And right now, that really isn't happening effectively. So a lot of research is happening by people kind of diverting existing research funds or other methods.
What can you tell us about geoengineering research in other countries?
There are certainly some research interests everywhere, most particularly in Europe. There's been lots of research in UK, Germany, France, probably most of all. And there are a couple of organized big research programs, kind of centrally funded research programs now in Germany, especially, and in the UK. They're mostly concerned with kind of the broad social science questions of how to think about the problem or assessing existing literature, not so much pushing ahead in new ways to maybe reduce the risks or understand new ways to make it work. But there is organized research, and I think it's interesting that that's happened in Europe and not in North America so far.
Would it be possible, David Keith, for a perceived enemy like North Korea or the new Islamic State to change our climate without international approval?
In sort of theoretical principle, yes. I think in practice, not really. So, yes, some of these methods could be implemented by a single state in the sense that, you know, for some ways you put material in the stratosphere, you really only need a single airfield and a pretty small number of aircraft. On the other hand, that's to have a pretty small effect that would be mostly beneficial, so it's not a very sort of effective weapon. And it would be very easy to stop. So, I mean, if North Korea or your examples or the Islamic State were doing this from an airfield, and the big powers wanted them to stop, it would be very easy to make them stop, either by military force or threat of force.
Could a relatively large-scale experiment in solar management happen without being detected?
It all turns on what the heck you mean by relatively large-scale. I mean, the kind of experiments that I and colleagues are talking about are, in many sense, incredibly small-scale. So I'm working on the development of an experiment. It would perturb a tiny area of the stratosphere and measure the chemical impacts. But we're talking about releasing like 100 grams of sulfate, which would be the equivalent of what is released by a minute's flight or so of a commercial aircraft. So I'm sure you could pull off a thing like that undetected. On the other hand, whether you think it's a good idea or not, it doesn't have any measurable climate impacts. I think it probably is conceivable that a country could pull off a substantially larger effort and it would be undetected, that would actually have some local impacts, short-term impact on climate? Yes.
What billionaires do you know that have expressed an interest in geoengineering, particularly SRM?
So a bunch of my work has been funded through gifts from Bill Gates, and we've used that as money as a purely philanthropic gift, and it's controlled through the usual controls that a place like Harvard has, and that's public. We've been very public about where all the money's gone, and it's funded quite a few researchers in some of the meetings on this topic. So that's by far the best example that I am familiar with. If by geoengineering you mean solar radiation management, there are lots of people who are wealthy people who talk about all sorts of things, but I'm not aware of anybody else who should have been seriously engaged in promoting research.
Well, fair enough. Have you heard interest in these technologies from either the U.S. military or secret agencies like the CIA?
Yeah, for sure. So the CIA approached me and several other leading researchers to ask about potential, same kind of questions you were asking about, could it be done covertly? Very much like the questions actually you just asked earlier in this interview. I had an interview with some CIA contractor a year or two ago, I forget. And there also have been people in the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, DARPA, which is a research agency but run through for military, that have expressed some interest. So there certainly is some. I'm from a kind of left-wing Canadian background, so I find all that pretty disturbing. But it's important actually not to overstate it. The military is sort of by definition interested in an enormous range of things, and the fact that there's some tiny little military interest in one thing doesn't mean that there's a sustained interest or the military is actually doing anything. So I think that, at least from what I know, and I feel like I'm enough an insider, I probably know quite a bit, that while people are nervous about military action, there's no evidence of sustained serious interest. I do think, looking forward, that it's really crucial that we focus on making these technologies as open and transparent as possible as early as possible. So, for example, I would be opposed to, say, large-scale funding of this research by DARPA, even if the research that they were funding was all made public and was really useful, well-organized research, because I think it would send a very bad signal to the rest of the world, and it could lead to a kind of a arms race is too strong, but to a tendency to secrecy that could be very destructive to kind of international confidence and trust in this area. So if the U.S. did that, then, you know, Chinese officials would likely do the same thing. So I think the hardest thing about this technology is not the technology itself, but it's figuring out how to manage it in a divided world. And for that reason, I think it's very important that early research be as open and transparent as possible.
So you said briefly that corporations and patents don't have a role in geoengineering the planet either.
Yeah, I think, well, again, if we're talking about solar radiation management or solar geoengineering, I think that, you know, corporations can do a fantastic job of trying to squeeze down costs. And, you know, that if you're building cheaper solar cells or cheaper wind turbines, I think that, you know, well-organized private enterprise can be a fantastic benefit. But I think that for solar geoengineering, the big issue is not to make the cost lower, because the costs are very low. The big issue is to understand the risks really well and be transparent about them and understand how well it works. And for that, it seems to me you really don't want corporations involved, because by their nature, not because they're bad things, they tend to promote their own interests. That's their job. So again, back to the analogy with solar power, I trust solar power companies do a great job driving down costs, appropriate incentives. But if it comes down to the question of whether, say, there are toxic metals in a particular solar process, I don't trust the company doing that process to do a good job of assessing that toxic metal risk. I look to independent researchers to do that. And, you know, for solar geoengineering, I think we don't want companies controlling it that would then, of course, have the incentive to minimize their risks and exaggerate the benefits.
So, David Keith, wrapping up, where does that leave us? Do you advocate starting solar radiation management now, sometime in the future, or maybe never?
The second two. As I said at the beginning, I think in the near term, what I advocate very strongly is a real commitment to research that should have happened 20 years ago. And because the potential benefits seem so large, I think a big research effort is really warranted. From what I see now, I think you can make a case, I would make a case, that it might make sense to begin very slow, moderate and slow ramp up of solar geoengineering quite quickly, so within a decade. That would only be true, though, if there was a big scientific research effort and if that effort kind of bore out the early knowledge we have so far.
We've been talking with Dr. David Keith. This Harvard-based scientist has been involved in many, if not most, serious discussions about the science of geoengineering and public policy. Find links to his website and work in my weekly show blog at ecoshock.info. David's latest book on this is A Case for Climate Engineering from MIT Press. David, I'm hoping to have you back again on Radio EcoShock to talk about sucking carbon out of the air. Will you join us again later?
Sure, I'd be very happy to. Thanks a whole lot.
Thank you, David, for your time today. I'm Alex Smith reporting for Radio EcoShock.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.